gonna do with our children? What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Good evening and welcome back to Mask's weekly radio show on Family Matters. Mask, Mothers and Fathers Aligned, saving kids, kids of all ages and all stages for all mental health struggles, including addiction. If you know someone that needs a referral for a therapist, an inpatient or outpatient program, please give us a call at 718-758-0400. I'll repeat the number. You may want to jot it down for yourself, a loved one, a neighbor, or someone you usually would sit next to in shul. Remember, all calls are kept strictly confidential. Our number again, 718-758-0400. If somebody wants to join a parent support group still being run by Zoom, please call us. We have groups on Sunday night for blended families, second marriages, bringing up each other's children. And that is facilitated by the therapist, Yeshaya Krause. On Monday night, Dr. Debbie Ackerman. On Tuesday night, Dr. Shmuel Brachfeld. On Wednesday night, Rabbi Dr. Ben-Zion Twersky. And Wednesday night in the Five Towns, we have Cheryl Friedman. Once a month, on the first Tuesday of the English calendar, Dr. Trish Attia in Brooklyn. Please call the Mask Helpline to register at 718-758-0400. Tonight really makes me proud to have on with us my guest, Yehuda Alkbez, who is a licensed clinical social worker in addictions, a specialist educator, and passionate advocate for creativity's importance in education and mental health. Yehuda actually is trained in the art of improv theater, and he performs regularly. He teaches improv comedy in group therapy as an adjunct treatment for addiction, anxiety, and trauma. Yehuda's a dear friend of Mask. I'd like to welcome you on tonight. How are you?
Hi, Rachama. How you doing?
I am good. How are you? It's been so many years. How have you been?
Yes, I'm doing great down here in Boca Raton. It has been many years since I came to your office looking for my first job, which you got me in working in addictions. So it's a full circle kind of thing.
I remember the day you came and I said, I've got the best place for you to get a job. And I send you to our dear friends and colleagues, the Safe Foundation. Mm-hmm. So a shout out to Ike Dweck for a wonderful program, the Safe Foundation. How long were you there? I don't remember.
I was there for about 2 years, and then I moved to Florida because that was a dream of mine for many years. So I was excited to get an opportunity down here and live in the, you know, this a little bit of a slower life, a little bit of a warmer life. No regrets.
The only regret, I guess, is from your in-laws, who actually, your mother-in-law being my first secretary at Mass 27 years ago, Brenda, and the famous Jay Booksbaum,
right.
I know they miss you being out in Florida, but they do visit often, I understand. So,
yeah, yes, for sure. And it's crazy to think that, you know, my mother-in-law was there with you 27 years ago. You know, we're doing this work and you guys are still here.
Yeah.
No way. Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, we miss her in the office. But let's get right to it. People do not realize that there is a way to do therapy very out of the box. Mm-hmm. So, number one, can you share a bit about your background and what led you to incorporate these creative therapies like music and comedy and art and tennis into your addiction treatment approach?
Yeah, so I went to LIU in Brooklyn, and there I studied addictions with Dr. Akiva Perlman, who really just made, you know, really inspired me to go deeper into the field of addictions. And then, you know, I have the clinical background, which I've worked at and I continue to work at, really understanding, you know, what is this disorder and how do we treat it? But there was, along the way, I would have my kind of creative self pop up as a clinician, where I would have, let's say I have my guitar in my office because I was using it. And I had clients who would come in and they would ask me about it. And they would be like, oh, is that for clients? Or they would be like, oh, I used to play guitar, but I don't play anymore. And what I started thinking after that was happening so many times was, you know, maybe there's something connected here, because, you know, I would hear a lot, I used to play and I don't play anymore. And it actually makes a lot of sense, because since addiction is a full-time job, it takes over everything, and it would cut you out from doing something that you're passionate about or something that really gives you a deep fulfillment in your life, like music, for example. So whenever I had a musical client, and I still do this today, we will pick up an instrument at some point during the treatment and we will use it. The music then led me to using other artistic creative mediums, and then even beyond that, activities outside of the office, like tennis or basketball, essentially with a goal of recovery beyond sobriety, that you can be sober, but you have not really reached into your own soul yet to understand what you were missing when you were active in your addiction. But when you do feel that, you won't want to let go of it, because you will think that this feeling is so much more deep and meaningful and sustainable.
You know, it reminds me, first I want to give a shout out to Akiva Perlman, who's at ODA, who's doing an amazing, amazing job there with the clinic in Williamsburg. But I do want to also go back to when I started Mass, mm-hmm. 27 years ago, and Chaim Winter. I remember when he was going rollerblading with the teenagers that didn't want to go therapy, he would take them rollerblading.
Right.
And that's how he did their therapy back then. So, and Chaim ran a parent group for Mask, our first parent group 27 years ago, for a long time.
I do remember that he used to do clowning, like,
yes.
Like professional clowning, right? I mean,
yes. Yeah. So, yeah.
Let's talk about out of the box treatments.
Yeah. And it was really good. So let's talk about the effectiveness of being out of the box. I mean, comparing it to the regular traditional therapeutic methods.
Yeah. So one of the things that's difficult about the traditional therapeutic methods is that we can measure success based on sober time, which is, it's a valid metric to use, but it doesn't tell the entire story. So, you know, the fact that I work in the outpatient setting, I work with a lot of individuals who have developed some sober time and some stability in their recovery, whatever they're recovering from, because I work with process and substance addictions, but they've developed some sense of stability and they're not living in the full chaos anymore. And at that point, a lot of times, in the treatment, there's kind of like a stepping back of the intensity of the treatment, which makes sense because the lower the dysfunction, the lower need for, you know, intense treatment. But what I believe a lot of times is missing is the beyond the sobriety, where it's really what does your soul need, right? Because we don't need to not have symptoms. That's not a successful life, right? If we have an illness and then the symptoms are gone, but then we don't get to use our life in a way that fills us up, so then we really haven't accomplished as much as we had hoped we would. And so I find that it's really helpful for the long-term motivation when, if it's something that the person has a connection to, so I can't force it on them. I can't be like, you should play tennis. And they're like, I don't like tennis. And I never do that. If it's something which speaks to them and I'm looking out for these little sparks, like when their eyes light up, when they're talking about something, when they have connection back to that spark and that soul experience, then the rivalry between should I relapse or should I keep my life the same actually becomes like a really solid battle, because the relapse is like, yeah, that's nice, but I won't get to play tennis today, or I won't get to play music, or I won't get to spend time with my kids. And those are things that I love.
And that's really important, because when somebody is an addict and they are in recovery, they do go 3 times a week for a program. They're in a 12-step program. They see a therapist, an individual. They go to a group meetings or whatever, generally, till they get back into the world. And it can be very lonely because they don't have any activities going on. They're not with their, when you are in recovery, you give up your old friends that you were doing drugs with. So now you need to look for new friends or go back to your better friends. So doing improv, comedy, music, whatever activity is also an outlet for them to start to get out in the world to do things again, right?
Yes, absolutely. And there's so many benefits to these kind of activities. Like there's social benefits, there's intrapersonal benefits, and so, you know, there's health benefits, and there's emotional benefits to a lot of these activities that I think in today's world, where we've made so much progress in appreciating the uses of therapy and the need for therapy, sometimes we can over rely on verbal interventions, let's call it, where we sit and talk about the problems, when the reality is that there are times where people actually need to do the opposite, right? So it's kind of like if you view the person as a multidimensional being. So if we took a look at what's missing and what's, you know, overflowing, so then we go directly towards what's missing. Sometimes what's missing is activities, is fulfillment, is connection, socialization, and that stuff could happen outside of traditional talk therapy.
I also want to touch on the subject of teenagers that resist going to therapy, but are very interested in doing music therapy, tennis therapy, improv, comedy, and that is a way to get them in the door.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, I think with teenagers, it's, you know, going to therapy, we have to always remember that going to therapy is like going to a nicer principal's office, because you're forced to go there. It's an adult who's going to ask you about all these areas of your life that potentially could get you into trouble if they don't like what you're saying or what you're doing. And as therapists, we do obviously want to, you know, show the teenager that we are not another principal's office, that we're different. But there's a lot more to their world and how they could feel safe. And a lot of times, you know, it's not even just like getting through the door thing. It's actually getting through to the actual teenager. It's like, if you can do this thing with me as a teenager, then I will feel like I matter and I can do things and I can connect to other people. I can trust people, you know, so there's so many uses to it. And so with teenagers, I think it absolutely should be considered as almost like a first line of defense, because the second anybody who works with teenagers or has a teenager, the second they feel like something is worth it, they go for it, right? Which sounds right. narcissistic, but that's what a teenager is. They're in a narcissistic phase of their life, right? So if you can convince them, not by explaining it to them, over-explaining, using too many words, you know, to explain it, but explaining to them by sharing the experience with them, they will join because they want to do things. They have so much energy and so much excitement about life, even though it might not look like it. But the second they connect to it, they're going to go all in on it.
Absolutely. And we've seen it. You're working with so many young adults. So we know it works. Right. I'm wondering if you can share or describe a specific technique or exercise you use in music therapy that's really shown significant success in helping patients with addiction.
Yeah, so the music therapy, what ended up happening is that as I started to do more music with my clients and have more musical instruments around my office, we decided that we were going to make an open mic night in my office. And on July 14th, we're having our fourth annual open mic night. We actually had a fifth one in the a mid-year one time. And what that is people in recovery come to either be in the audience or perform. And I work with them to whatever level they're at with their music. I will work with them to either get them up to a level musically where they feel comfortable performing, or get them to a level emotionally where they feel comfortable performing. Because I've worked with clients who are brilliant musicians, but they're overwhelmed with anxiety to the point where they can't imagine themselves performing in front of other people. And so we've taken it to a whole nother level when we have a night where everybody is performing original songs, other people's songs, all different types of music. We have sometimes have Kalbach and sometimes we have really heavy metal. And that's my favorite thing, when they blend together, where we have just such an array of different types of music, but it's a really supportive environment. And it's really reinforcing this idea that, you know, this is not an afterthought in your life. You're sober. What do we get to do with our lives when we're sober? And this is an example of it. So we really took the music up to a whole new level with that. I've recorded songs with clients, and it's just you can see that it's a different experience for them when they've used something which they thought they were never going to use ever again, and now they feel a deep sense of fulfillment, which is sustainable, and they can build off of it.
Absolutely. Let's talk about improv comedy and, you know, those unique benefits that you have to offer.
Yeah, so improv comedy is one of my favorite things in the world. I started taking a class for myself. It's something that I've always gravitated to. But when I got to the class, I started to realize that, you know, when improv comedy is the art of making up a story on the spot, usually with one other person, sometimes it's more, and there could also be less, but usually with one other person. And what I realized is that it's really an art form in listening and connecting, which is not what I thought going in. Going in, I thought it's an art form that really is, you know, if you're inclined to it and you're talented, so then you'll be good at it. We have in improv a concept called yes and. And yes and is you train yourself whenever your scene partner add something to the story, you say yes to it. You say yes to what they've added to the reality. And then you add something yourself, and that's where the and comes in. So you would have somebody, let's say, who starts out a scene by saying, I just dug this giant hole, and I'm ready to fill it. And then you might be like, yeah, and that's why I bought all these pumpkin seeds. It doesn't matter, because you actually start to find your way together. And so I started using it in my anxiety group with socially anxious individuals, adults, not even teenagers. And I found that the mix of the playfulness and the low stakes in terms of making mistakes allowed them to move further in their anxiety, past their anxiety, than they had done previously. And then I started doing it for individuals in recovery. And now I will do it with couples. I'll do it with anybody, anywhere. So it's a really, really cool blend of something that is more associated with the theater world, but the history of it is it actually was developed in America by a social worker with immigrant children in the 1930s in Chicago. So, you know, it's something that I brought in from outside the therapy world, but it actually was always part of the therapy world.
Right, and it's used to teach communication and connection and acceptance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And those are all feelings that people with anxiety struggle with.
Right. And in terms of addiction, you know, addiction is a disease. It's, you know, it's a selfish disease where it's the only thing that matters when someone's active in their addiction is what's going to make them feel better. And what improv does is it teaches you that you have to let go of the thing that you think is going to work, because right now you need to listen and you need to appreciate the gifts that you're being given from your scene partner, and you need to say yes to it. And then you'll get a chance to add something, but it's not about one person. There's no one person that can maintain an improv scene and the other person is just kind of like riding along. It's always 100% a team effort.
And your groups that you do, how big are your groups?
So my groups are relatively small. You know, I'm in private practice and I like to keep them small. I don't like the idea of having large groups where people get lost. So most of our groups cap out at 10 and, you know, we'll hover somewhere in the middle of that, people coming in and coming out of the group. And we have different types of group. I have sex addiction groups, anxiety groups, and then improv groups, which are really actually just me teaching the art of improv. And, you know, we don't even necessarily need to talk about the therapeutic benefits in the group itself, because I believe that when you feel it, you feel it. And when you feel it, you know it, and then you want more of it, and then you live your life differently.
And what ages are you accepting in these groups?
Mostly adults. On occasion, I will have a teenager, like an older teenager, joining the group if it feels appropriate. But it's mostly
17, yeah. 18. Yeah.
Right.
Got it.
Yeah, something like that. But it's really adults. And I have, sometimes I'll have, you know, like a 50 something year old man who's doing a scene acting like an elephant and they're having the best time.
All right. And Yehuda, parents are listening this evening to the show. And they're going to think to themselves, do you integrate any Jewish values or teachings in your therapies?
Yes. Yes, I do. I have an individualized kind of a approach on that, because a lot of the adults that I work with are coming out of experiences within the religion that, you know, were either deeply painful or just, you know, good old fashioned alienation. And I really spend a lot of time trying to understand where the person is up to with, as they you know, as it relates to religion, and what their goals are with religion. You know, there are times where people are just nowhere near the religion. And, you know, I can see those situations very clearly as this is not the goal for this person right now, because, you know, there's just too much pain associated with it. And they also haven't yet lived their life as an individual, because they've been so, you know, their life experience up until then has just been a mixture of pain and addiction and a cycle of that. And so sometimes they're going out there and they're exploring and we're talking about it. And you know, my goal is to get them to a healthy, safe place of living. And then on top of that, get them to a place where they feel like, you know what, I like the life that I live. What I find anecdotally is that a lot of times people will, you know, want to be more part of, you know, religion and the Jewish culture and the Jewish faith and going to shul and things like that when they like themselves. And, you know, they got to figure out how to like themselves by exploring what they actually like, because up until then, you know, it might have just been drugs or porn or something like that. And that's not actually who they are, you know.
Absolutely. But parents like to know that at some point you may be including in the conversations about our Jewish values.
Absolutely.
Teachings.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I also love to have, you know, deep intellectual conversations about, you know, hashkafa with my clients. And we uncover a lot of really, really deep, fascinating things, which, you know, even if the person is up to a place where they're not interested in being religious, The exploration is that's a religious act, and that's something which gives people clarity on maybe it's not just a set of rules. Maybe this is the kind of thing which actually has a much deeper experience to it, which I haven't had yet. So, you know, there are times where my therapy sessions look a lot like a shear, and then there are other times where it, you know, it doesn't conflict with Judaism, but it's not necessarily talking about Judaism.
Absolutely. So would you like to share maybe a success story where maybe the client made really remarkable progress through one of your creative therapies? Of course, no names, no details.
Yes. The one I always think of was in my anxiety group. I had a client that I was working with for several years at that point who had multiple diagnoses. And one of them was he actually struggled tremendously when he was younger because he had OCD and his parents didn't understand it. And so then, you know, it got reinforced, all the anxiety. And he was in my anxiety group and we were doing an improv game where in the scene that he was in, he was a driving student in a car with a driving instructor. And in the middle of the scene, he got kind of panicked and he looked at me and he said, I'm drawing a blank. And I said, that's okay. Do you want to keep going? And I explained to him that in improv, everything is done as a team. So if you need me to tap you out, this would be a real thing that would be done in improv, is you just kind of tap them on the shoulder, you take their place in the scene. So I tapped him out. When I sat down in his seat in the scene, in my head, I thought there's no way that this guy is coming back in the scene. Like I've seen him get, you know, that level of anxiety before and it tends to spiral and it takes him a long time to regulate. So I start taking over his place in the scene and he called me back out of the scene in under a minute. He's like, I'm ready. And he just came back in and he sat down and pretended to be, you know, a driving student. And I remember that day I looked at my partner after the group and I was like, was that crazy that what just happened in there? And she was like, I've never seen him do that. So I think about that all the time because we had done so much anxiety work up until that point, and I'm sure that it was beneficial and I'm sure that it set the stage for this kind of a moment. But that moment with the creative therapies it was just one that really sticks out in my mind as this might be very, very powerful and might have the ability to do things that our traditional therapies don't necessarily do.
Right, or get them to the point of being able to benefit from traditional therapy.
Right.
Well, it's great having you on, and I know so many clients are so happy with all the different types of therapies you are offering. Anyone that wants to reach you, Huda, please give us a call, 718-758-0400. Thank you. Hope to have you on again soon, Huda.
Alma, thank you so much for everything you do and for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
And I want to wish everyone a very good evening, a beautiful Shabbos, and always remember, hang in, hold on, hug tight. Tonight's show is in honor of all the Chayalim. Bring the hostages home now. Please consider to go online to maskparents.org and donate so we could continue with all the mask programs. Thank you and have a good night.
Every time you make a healthy choice, you make your body and your mind happy. So what is healthy? Healthy is getting more sleep. It's also getting more exercise and eating well. It's seeing your doctor regularly. Healthy is even managing your stress in a way that's good for you. Healthy is being connected to others and free to live your best life. For tips and resources or to learn more about New York City's campaign for healthier, longer lives, visit nyc.gov/stayhealthy.
Rubenstein at JCon Conferences inviting you to attend our real estate summit on Tuesday, July 9th at the Hilton in Staten Island. For more information and to sign up for our early bird tickets, please visit attendjcon.com. That's attend, ATTEND, JCon, JCON.com. If you're in the real estate industry, whether it be management, construction, development, You don't want to miss this event. This is our 7th annual JCon real estate event, which will take place on Tuesday, July 9th at the Hilton in Staten Island. Please visit attendjcon.com to sign up for our early bird special.